podcast. I am your host, Aka Kandewo Kandewo, also known as Aka. In my past life, one thing I enjoyed before COVID, I can't believe we say this now, but one thing I enjoyed before COVID was I'm going for poetry or just hanging out with the poets because I love spoken word. If only I had that skill set, right? And my other love is for books and everything to do with music and everything going on in between. So today's guest is somebody we are going to be just diving on a few stuff to do with music, poetry, books, and just life in general. So with that being said, today's guest is Ludo Fresh. Hi, Ludo.
Hi, Aka. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I'm doing great.
What are you known for?
What am I known for? Well, I am mostly known for my, okay, it's debatable which one is mostly known for actually at the moment, because a lot of the people that now follow me on my Facebook page came in when I started doing online rap battles. So my first love has always been music. I started writing at the age of 7. And when I turned 15, I started writing poetry, which is a good 20 years ago. Wow. And yeah, so once I started writing poetry, I started writing music on a more serious, I could record this level.
Mm-hmm.
And in 2010, about 2010-11, I started recording music. So I'm known both for rap music and for poetry. That should be the first thing that comes to mind when someone thinks of Ludo Fresh.
That's very interesting, I might add, because I think the pattern there is writing and expressive art, I guess, it's expressive art and writing, which is like very interesting. Like I'm as a flip side on the other side who just enjoys people's art. Like we're grateful for you people that do this for a living, but we really just I'm gonna enjoy your art. I'm so curious to kind of understand how we're talking before we started recording, how you studied marketing. I know marketing is expressive art as well. Like, yeah. But like the in-between there, it's what inspired you to study marketing at the University of Lusaka.
Okay, so I think the first thing is I initially started studying accounts. And
ooh, me too.
Really?
That's interesting. Well, I'm an accountant though. But yeah.
Okay. So I started studying accounts and I literally studied it because one of my uncles who is very well to do studied accounts. And so I was just like, I want to have money. What did you do? ACCA? Great. I'm going to follow that path. But I think somewhere along the way, the same uncle sat me down and said, look, you are a very smart person, I trust and believe, and you're just dragging your feet at what you're studying. Like after the first year, I would just take my time writing those papers. Like I really wasn't motivated. And so he said, what do you really want to do? And so I think in the fourth year of studying it, I had started working at a marketing agency. And that's when I started learning copywriting and started learning this creative work can be used to do fun stuff like make adverts and write scripts for TV adverts or radio adverts or copy for billboards. And so he was like, you're already doing this. You're already working as this. So why don't you just switch and start studying marketing? Yeah, that took a bit of time to convince myself and my parents at the time. But eventually I got these exemptions when I went to UNILAS because of all the accounting papers that were already covered in ACCA. And so they knocked off a good point of my study time. Yeah, and I proceeded at UNILAS. And I feel while I was doing the course, it really just felt like I am now you know, writing about things I've already been doing. So a lot of things were very simple for me. The accounting courses were super easy for me because I'm just like, okay, ACCA is way more tough than the accounting I was doing at degree level. And so I guess that made the journey quite easy.
That makes a lot of sense. And yeah, I think for me, I always say to people that I don't have like a very impressive story when it comes to my life. Because even studying was like, yeah, it's time for you. We're tired of you in the house. Please go to school. I went to school. My uncle's like, don't you want to do law? And I'm like, nah, I can't have wild hair if I do law. So I'm going to do something basic. Oh, accounting is easy. And I did accounting. So yeah, it's like that type of thing.
A lot of people wouldn't agree with you that accounting is easy, but okay.
Accounting is the easiest thing.
Wow.
Like, I know, to be honest, if you've met me, you'd be like, yeah, I don't know how she passed. I don't even know how I'm successful sometimes. And maybe because you don't need really so much formal education to be very successful. Like, you really just need to harness specific skill sets and navigate life and smile a lot like I do. Then you'll be successful. Please do not quote me.
I'm there. I'm taking notes.
I am very hardworking. My friends always say, don't lie to people. But honestly, I genuinely believe accounting is very easy. I do know it's different with ACCA as well. But the accounting degree is not as hard as people.
Yeah, I feel like if I did the degree, I would have been done quicker, to be fair.
Yeah,
it made me feel dull. I was like, why am I still rewriting this? And I think the papers are crafted in such a way where they're testing you for two things. So they're testing you for your knowledge, but they're also testing you for your speed. And I think that was the struggle for me, you know, because one of the first things we'd always ask is, oh, did you manage to complete the whole paper? You know, that was the thing. And so because I took a lot of time in thought, I'll just be like, I'm not really writing this paper out of finishing it. So I'm already working with, like, I wrote 60%. How do I get the 50, you know? So that was the struggle for me.
No, I actually get it. And yes, there are certain extents when you are doing your degree at UNILAS where certain paper, example, like taxation or financial, like certain paper, like taxation would be like one I can remember correctly. You would never finish that paper. I love taxation.
I love that paper.
Like, I feel like taxation has made me so crafty, even as a person now. Like, the math doesn't add up, guys. And I always make my decision based on tax. I'm like, oh, if I do this and this and this with my company, it makes sense. As an individual, nah, I'm not paying that much. So yeah, like, taxation will always be like one of my favorites. Something you mentioned when you're having a conversation with your uncle, and also just him telling you, hey, this is not working out for you, you're already doing this, why don't you pivot and do something that you already have interest in and maybe have a solid ground. How was that conversation like for you after looking at somebody you admire so much and you're like, I want to be like you, and now you're telling me to pivot?
He asked me like very valid questions, because he asked me, why did I start? And I don't think he knew that I started because I was trying to be like him. You know what I mean? He was trying to remind me that they are, and he's always done this. He's always told me, Ludo, there's just something very unique about you. Like, he's always spoken life into me in a way that I didn't necessarily see myself. And he was just trying to say, you already thrive in this area, so be like you. You know, that's your superpower. I think the hardest part of the conversation was not about me saying, oh, I now need to think about a new direction, because deep down I knew, like, this is draining the life out of me. I think it was as an African child coming back to your parents and saying, look, I know you've been waiting to see your daughter become that accountant, but I'm not doing this anymore. And I want to switch to something that's more me. And doing creative writing, you know, a lot of people don't necessarily in our society, maybe now that they would see, oh, she, you know, scripted this ad and you see the ad come to life. It was like, no one really understood what I was doing. Like, what are you doing? You're making these adverts that go online. What is it? Are you just posting on Facebook? You know, they minimalized what it is that copywriters do. And so that was the struggle. The look, I love doing creative writing. I've been doing it all along. I guess at my core, I am just a writer in so many, you know, ways, like you mentioned. And so I want to have a backing to this skill because a lot of people in the field I'm in will be like a copywriter, but this person has a degree in accounting, you know, all these people who had to kind of go the way that was more acceptable and then pursue their passion. So I was like, why not just have a qualification that directly backs what I'm doing? And so it made sense. What he was saying made perfect sense. It was just I'm going to wrestle a bit with my family, which I did, but they came around.
So it always just goes back to family expectations of what they think you're going to be.
Yeah.
Or what they expect you. And also even for us as dependents, as children, we always were raised to want to please our parents.
Yeah.
Like so much. Like, oh my goodness, what could I do? What can I do to please them? And then you also realize that there's a point where you stop pleasing them and you just being alive is good enough for them.
Yeah.
I'm always saying that to myself. Me being alive is like a good enough thing for them. Mm. So when we dive into like creative writing, copywriting, you do your own work, right? And how does that feel to know that your copyright, someone could use your work without your permission? Or how have you learned to kind of protect your work? Because you're an artist. And I know, I'm looking for the word. I know it has to do with patents. Mm-hmm. I've forgotten. So when it's artists, how do you protect your work? Is it copyrights or patents? Which patents do you guys use? Is what I'm trying to use.
You know, that's very interesting because I always also get confused between the two because I have someone who always handles this for me via through management, right? So there's copyright protection, yes, and there's having your stuff patented where no one can use similar or, you know, try to, for example, if I could patent the fresh brand, right?
Yeah.
One could come and also be like, oh, something fresh and use it in a similar way. But yeah. For example, like with the book, right? Because there is a sensitive nature of the way that when it's being edited, it's going out to all these people, right? The best thing to do is to holla at Takra and make sure that you have that like in your name. Right. And that's the copyright protection that you need to have. So some people might be more casual about certain things. Like maybe you've written a song and you're just like, oh, I'm there. Yes.
I'm so sorry. I'm so happy.
No problem.
I was Googling this. You can go on.
Yeah. So you'll find like there's a song that you've, and a lot of artists had that here where they're like, oh, they stole my song. Right. And there was no evidence to show that the song was yours. So I think it is very important to actually take that route over things that you care about.
So to back what you're saying, I always forget, but I found them on the Parkour website. So the question mm-hmm. had to do with patents, trademarks, copyrights, and trade secrets. I think for artists, it's copyright. Yeah, like
copyright.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So it's about copyright. So I think we're correct.
Yeah. So copywriting is that's actually protecting your work, right? Yeah. Like this is my intellectual property, right?
Yes, yes, yes.
And then patent, I was thinking more along the lines of like if it's my a brand.
Yeah, like I think trademarks and patents, if it's like Coca-Cola, You can't use their logo, that type of thing. Well, we're really ambushing this. If there's anyone from PACRA, please come on the podcast so we can have a conversation about copyrights and just patents in Zambia. I did have somebody as well. So you also mentioned that you do not know that, you do not handle that part of your
work. Not at all.
Yeah, somebody else does it. But is this like an active conversation you have with management to say, hey, how do I protect my work? What is actually required? And
yes, it is. It is an active conversation with, like, I remember that happened when I had done my poetry album. So there's, as I mentioned, these things, they've been pulled off from online. So please don't ask me where they can be found.
Okay.
So when I did my poetry album, I had to figure out what to do to ensure that I have protected my work. So every new body of work needs a new conversation.
Okay. So when did you put out your poetry album, and like, what was the was the primary reason that you needed to protect your work, or maybe something influenced that? You pulling out your work, your poetry album, off the internet?
I had my poetry album officially released in 2016, and it was a mixture of poetry, but I took the opportunity to put some music in there, right? So there were some rap songs, there were some songs that I was singing, and there were poems. However, the music and the poetry I've done over some time, especially if I listen to the poetry album, there was a lot of pain that was in that album that I had to question whether, because my ultimate goal as an artist, as a creative, is I am a healer. I have known that from the jump, right? And there are ways that I feel my healing journey might have influenced other people, because there was a time when I was just bleeding all over the place, you know, and I was hurting in the form of my art, right? And a lot of the times, even the conversations I have with people who now started listening to the stuff I was releasing later were like, there's such a shift and there was so much pain in what you were doing. So I think conviction more than anything else, like I just felt convicted to pull everything down, because a lot of the things that I was writing were not necessarily how I would write today. I didn't agree with some of the ways I viewed things. So it was like I'd wrestle with myself when listening to my own music or listening to my own poetry, you know. I'd be like, yo, I don't believe that anymore. I don't side with that. And I thought a lot of the projects I put out were like things people could use to stay miserable. And that was definitely not what I was attempting to do. Certain things just felt like they glorified pain and you could just wallow in self-pity and keep them on replay. So I took it all down for a fresh start.
Yeah. Don't you think it's an injustice for everybody else that connected with that art? Like, I understand on a personal level why you made that decision. Don't you think it's an injustice that for everybody else that connected with that art, firstly? And secondly, I don't agree with half of the things I say or do all the time. But then I look at the past and be like, yeah, I used to think that way. What has preempted me to outgrow that? And it's just good to look back and see what you were. It also just shows the difference of who you are now and what you have become and what you were.
Yeah, so a lot of the things I do are not even moved by my personal preference, right? A lot of the things I do are moved by my personal relationship with God. So I don't do things that I want to or I like or I feel, because maybe that sounded like that was a personal decision. It was more of a conviction of this is what I feel this is the reason why I feel, Ludo, you should pull this down. Okay. So as the relationship I have with God, basically what happened was I wrestled. There was so much stuff I wanted to keep up. But I feel one of the most loudest things I was hearing in my life was, I am doing a new thing in your life. Can you not perceive it? And so my attachment to the past was the problem. I would get so attached to my old ways of doing things. I would get so attached to the old people I used to work with, and even the way I used to channel in my writing. And so I feel it was more of a surrender thing for me to be brave enough and bold enough to say, let's do this. Let me open up to what I feel I'm being directed to do in this season. And one of the things I was being directed to do because of my attachment to the past. And I think that's more related to my journey and not per se. I don't think that everybody would need to pull their things down, if that makes sense. So even when people reach out to me and they're like, I'm looking for this, I'm just like, well, sorry, it's not there. And I don't really have a clear-cut explanation, because it sounds like a strange conversation to have, to be like, yo, I feel I was convicted. I feel God told me to pull this down. But basically that's it. Because if I was doing things by my own will or my own desire, I definitely wouldn't release this book, because I don't think it makes me look good. I think it makes me look like a great writer, but I don't think it makes me look good as an individual. Yeah.
I think that makes a lot of sense. It's such an interesting conversation to have, right? When you look back and you think about the stuff that you were doing and everything that is going on, it's, at least you get to, if any of your followers get to listen to this, they know you, they get to hear your point of view to why you made that decision. Yeah. And in the end, what matters is what you want to do. Like, in the end, it's your work.
Yeah.
It's good to outgrow it and take it down.
Yeah.
I need that courage. But I also take down stuff I'm not comfortable to have. So I get it. What are you working on now?
So currently, it's after finishing the book, what we're trying to do with it as well, me and the team, is to get this book into libraries and schools. So I have recently started, the first talk I had was like last week, which I just went to a group of youth and I was just talking to them basically about the height of my depression and all the things that had caused it, you know, the experiences that I'm sharing in the book with, like, alcohol abuse, just finding different ways to numb myself that were toxic, and how it escalated into me wanting to end my life. And so this conversation is what's opening us up to just like having these conversations with youth. If the schools are open to buying the books, they do. If not, we just encourage the young people to buy the book, but also just have genuine conversations about them, about their mental health, about the choices they're making, so that there's also that lasting impact. Because this is ultimately what this book was designed for. It was designed to make people either face things they haven't faced or just protect them from certain decisions. Because I wrote it in an honest enough way for you to be like, okay, I don't think I would like to have this pain or this experience. Maybe I should really question whether this is the path I'd like to take. And so, yeah, writing the book was going hand in hand with a short film that I star in as well. And so I'm basically really in a new, doing completely new things kind of space, which is the short film and the book.
I know you don't want me to say that's exciting, but that's exciting. It's very new. We talked about earlier, before we started recording, you talked about how everything is making you very anxious and there's a lot going on. I get it. I think that when you are doing something relatively new and different, and I guess also rebranding and just creating a new path, it's really different. You are going to experience anxiety because, yeah, you really also don't know the outcome on how things are going to go down.
Yeah,
so true. The book it's a memoir. It's called Ludo.
Yes.
Your name. You should copyright your name.
I wish. There's a whole group. There's
I don't even know. Yeah,
online called Ludo as well.
Yeah. And from what I get, it's coming out on the 9th of October. What I'm getting from this is that it's about your experiences, your life choices, and the depression you went through. I just want us to dive a little bit deeper to how you made the decision to write the book, and kind of let's talk about some of the stories in the book to just to let me know what I should look for when I read it.
Okay. So, what made me decide to start writing it? So I was writing to survive. At the time, I was not aware I was writing a book. I always used to speak about how I was going to write a book about a series of my bad relationships, right? And when I finally settled down, I'll release this book and call it For My Daughters, because I want to tell them characteristics of the people they shouldn't look out for. I find that interesting because there is like a lot of my bad relationships explained in this book, you know. But as much as I wrote that, I still started adding other things. So I think I became more aware that there's so much more that young people should know. And when I was writing this book, I started looking back to my experiences, and I was now just about to become a mother. And so I was like, okay, I literally think that For My Daughters thing was like just a sign, you know, like in future, you will want to do this specifically for your daughter. So as crazy as that may seem, when someone who's more conservative, I think, looks at the book and says, why would you even want your daughter to read these stories? I think I was actually motivated most by her. I was motivated also by my nieces, who I love so much. And I was just like, you know what? I want my nieces, even my nephews, to just like read this and want to be better and do better, but not like in a preachy kind of way, not like in a alcohol is not good for you. If you abuse it, you will, you know, I don't want to do that. I just want to be a certain type of vulnerable, which I'm not used to in our culture, and just be like, yo, so no, I wasn't perfect. This was what my life was like, but these were the ripple effects. And I almost didn't come out of it. You know, I almost got sucked in by all the things I thought were exciting, but really I was just numbing myself. So that's what started it. It was me feeling a little bit heavy by my past, but also thinking, how do I turn this into power? Because I'm about to have a child. And so the story just starts with the height of my depression. It starts with, you are seeing me at my lowest and I am about to harm myself. That's how it starts. And then I have this, you know, encounter where I feel like I'm being shown there's more. There's more for me. There's more for my path. And then I take you on a journey like, okay, let me tell you how I got to this place. Let me show you what got me here. And so I take you through the journey of a couple of my experiences. So some of the chapters that I've already openly talked about is this relationship with this guy that's going on called Simon. And at some point, there's another woman called Betty. And I'm just so envious of her. I just don't like her because she's like everything I'm not, you know. And so she exposes all the things I haven't come to terms with about myself. And there's a chapter about when I got spiked, which I've also already given like hints about. So there's all these things that happened to me. I'm not looking like a victim, you know, all the time. Sometimes I am the cause of the problem. Sometimes I am the instigator. And that's why I said that this book doesn't necessarily make me look like a good individual. I wrote it in a way where, of course, it's a short memoir, so I didn't take all these experiences that I went through, but I took the ones that I felt were very significant things about my personal journey and about things that people are going through now that they might not know may be harmful. So yeah, it's a very real and very uncomfortable, very sometimes funny. Like, it really takes you on a roller coaster. If anything, that's the one thing I feel I do even with my poetry shows. Like, I would try to take you through all the motions, and that's what this book does.
Interesting. I want to take you back to you saying you wrote this book. It was originally, you were going to say, for my daughters. You said writing notes, and so you're going to put a book in it. Then now you are a mother, and you're like, yeah, I'd like my nieces, my nephews, and my child to kind of have a few of some advice from me, but not feel like it's preaching. And I totally get it. I am no parent. But I just wish that as a society, we could start having honest conversations.
Yeah.
And I think that's like that's been like my struggle with the people oldest to me. Because I do understand you're wiser. But I always believe like we're not being honest about certain things. Yeah. And the certain things are affecting us in different ways. Which has been like one thing I have struggled with, honestly, because I'm like, could you just tell us what actually happens in marriage? That's a joke. But I honestly,
I feel as a newlywed, I feel like there's a lot that
no one says, eh?
Yeah, that no one says that could help people. Yeah.
And for me, I'm like, It's the one thing everybody advocates for. Oh, no, you do this. It's good for you. It's good for you. Can we talk about the implications that have, and this is just an example, right?
Yeah.
Let's talk about the implications that have for women and for men. Like, if you're going to tell me how it's an amazing experience and I should go in it, of course you want certain things I just have to experience for myself, right?
Yeah.
But tell me certain implications that, as a union, as women, we can all understand and we can all relate to. So that if I go there, do I have to experience a certain thing? I think that is there for me, where you're just like, you people just want me to experience this so I can become a strong soldier, da 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 da. And I think I'll say this to somebody. We're talking about marriage.
Yeah.
And he, Will I be kicked for this? But anyway, we were talking about the premarital lessons
with this
person, right? And he was like, well, they do teach you how to have sex. And I'm like, yeah, they also teach you how to have sex. Like the, how can I say it? Like the tradition we have where they pass you through certain ceremony in the village and they teach you all that stuff. And I always say, hey, then you want to stop child marriages, but you're teaching them how to have sex. Does that make sense? So yeah. We were talking about that, like, oh, they teach you all this stuff. And I'm like, true. But you know how long the women's process is and the man's process? It's like, maybe it's a good thing of being taught that. Great, I have no problem. But that's the duration and the experience for the woman. It just leaves I know you're newlywed, like, but it leaves me with a lot of questions. And when you were talking about how I hope this book inspires so many people and all that, I'm always like, can we start having conversations? Because the Gen Z in me is always saying no. I'm like, ish. I can't say it can never be me, but I'm just like, guys.
It's interesting because I think that, like, I did a podcast episode where I actually spoke about these teachings quite recently, and I was just like, the dangers of, you know, getting someone you don't know very well.
Yeah.
And, you know, this person is coming into your life at a very tender time and giving you advice in a very important transitional phase in your life, right? So I hear exactly what you're saying, because like I'm very grateful that I have stepped into marriage older, because I think if I was in my early 20s, it would have been easy to have been manipulated into doing a lot of things I didn't want to do, you know. So even in the process, there is, like you say, the traditional way. However, there were other people who I knew more who were introduced to me. And those were like, they dropped the real gems, you know, like,
yeah,
the outside of the tradition, like they kept really real with me. They had so many conversations with me. They talked to me about parenting. They talked to me about in-laws, and just like gave me nuggets of wisdom of how to go, you know, how to master the art of being, you know, good to people, but not overstretching to the point that you are burnt out. And, you know, our culture does this thing where sometimes all we're being taught is how to please, how to be there, how to, you know, they even say things like a woman doesn't get tired and all that stuff. And so I think the more realistic conversation will be had with those who really care about you. So even those dropping the nuggets of advice or settle down, you sometimes can just gauge by, firstly, is this person happy themselves? Because sometimes sometimes just misery needs company. So yeah, who's speaking this over you?
Misery need company. Which is true. Misery always needs company.
Yeah.
And that's the thing, right? It's like you are miserable or you're not happy in this thing.
Yeah.
But you're still telling us to join you.
Which is strange.
Which isn't even, like, it's not giving, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And I think for me, one of the most, I graduated last year, university, right? One of the most important thing I had, conversations I had with my aunt, is in December before my graduation, we were going to a wedding. And she was coming back to drop me off at home. And she said, to be honest, we don't need to marry you off anytime soon. She, like, there is pressure outside on just trying to get everything done. Like, the pressure outside will always be there.
Yeah.
Some of your peers will get married before you. This will happen. Like, a lot will just be unfolding. Like, I know conversations with you are about to change, because initially we just want you to graduate university.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, honestly, I just prefer you to do what you're doing and stick to it for a while and not pay so much attention to it. And that's like the best. I always go back to that conversation. She's one of my favorite aunts. And she's married. She's happily married. She has kids.
Yeah.
But I needed somebody to openly say it, because she said it and others were like, where's our in-law? I'm like, which one? We need to be very specific when we're asking about people's kids. People are always asking about relationships and stuff like that, but no one is actually asking, well, how's your experience in the dating world? Do you even feel like you'd want to settle down with anybody? With
Have you met someone who you think would be meaningful, like add value to your life, you know, the right questions?
And, like, because why are we always asking our kids or our girl kids, as if after, we're really getting deep into this, right? As if after university, the next big thing you see for your child is marriage.
Yep. Well, that's what it is. Exactly what it is.
And it's like you don't really care what they marry or what they marry into.
Yeah, that is that's the concerning part.
She's a graduate. She's married. She has kids. And I'm trying to make peace with the fact that that's where you see it. And I'm like, I have never met anybody that I am actively thinking I would marry. Like, I don't even think about it that much. And I think the one twist of this generation is everybody will probably marry later.
Like, yes, like, everyone will marry later. How do I? What's the interesting thing about this? I feel like the only problem I have with like this generation is a lot of us marry later, but a lot of damage has been done, you know.
Ooh.
So a big problem is what's happening with our society is that we have experienced a certain level of freedom, right? Like, which is free will, that even the choices we're making are hurting ourselves. Of course, a lot of those who came before us were being kind of forced into settling down early, right? Mm-hmm. They had no say, they had no voice. But now we forget that our say and our voice harms ourselves. So now I have so much baggage. The one thing I was so grateful for, right, when I got married, and this is one thing I think is a beautiful thing about marriage, that is also a painful thing about it that people don't talk about, is because you two are now in a home and you're in the same space. If you two are both like healthy, we both want to build this type of people. The two becoming one is the hard part, because now you're looking directly, it's like you're looking in a mirror. Because imagine if you're struggling with something and your partner right next to you is like, it's easy for them, right? You have to go through life learning to, even though this person who you thought was going to be the one validating you and everything, you're learning first to be validated in yourself so that you don't put too much pressure on that person. So there's a lot of unlearning, right? There's a lot of rebuilding yourself. There's a lot of like, I have to be confident in me to be my best version for you. That happened. So that's the discomfort. That's the, I thought I was the most kind person in the world. Now I realize that when you get both the pieces of chicken, I turn into Godzilla. There's all these little crazy things you're realizing about yourself. But if you're with a great, mature person, you guys are both like just iron sharpening iron, you know, and learning and be like, oh. So that's one of the things I found interesting, because there's so many ways I thought I was mature that I'm not. But I'm so grateful I started cleaning up my life years ago, because I can't imagine jumping from I'm still so conceited, I do things just whatever pleases me goes, and then I have to learn to be with someone. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, I get what you mean. And listening to you speak kind of makes me think of my life right now. How I am learning that if I'm in a relationship with somebody, or if I'm talking to somebody, I just can't make a decision not to talk to them the next day. Really, like, I can't be very petty. I'm just like, oh, I can imagine those who are married. I'm also learning that I'm not very mature. I'm everything, but ish.
So at least you're learning that early. I thought I was so mature.
No. Like, I see certain things unfold in front of me, and I'm like, damn, I'm not that mature. Like, I just let that unfold because I decided that I would not be the bigger person. It's very interesting. And for me, honestly, my work and what I do and what I believe in is, we already have this information. Things are going down with or without our say. We just need to start changing the narrative and talking about certain things more. It doesn't mean we have to publicly bash stuff online. Like, I don't need it to be trendy. But if we can have the eldest in your family kind of just sit the youngest ladies in the family to talk about certain things in a certain way, right? Like, I genuinely believe not everything needs to be on the internet. We just you need to have those conversations. Because if I end up to be a mom one day, I will tell my kids. Right? I will not pretend. Like, I will not pretend that it's easy. Because either way, stuff will not be easy. It's you deciding every single time if it's worth it.
Yeah.
So, I'm genuinely a believer of... Let's start having these conversations amongst ourselves. Let's actually have the real conversations and see where they'll take us.
Yeah.
So I really look forward to reading your book. It's something we should all be reading and having this conversation and having the raw type of conversations. And now that you're on the other side, what's the one thing, you know, when they used to say that you know when you grow up, what's the one thing that you now know when you've grown up that they've always used to tell you and you never used to believe?
I'm trying to not phrase it in a toxic way. It's just like, that guy who can't be faithful, he can't be what to the world, but he's so charming with you. You really convince yourself that he's gonna be nice to you? Like, you've watched him. You've had a front row seat in his work. Maybe he even left a previous relationship for you. But there you are, being invested, saying, we just click. The stars light up in his eyes. And you convince yourself that this dodgy character has all of a sudden located morals because you are just that amazing. You know, that all his chaotic ways have immediately disappeared. I think that was the thing that's just like, this guy isn't good for you. Like, no, but he treats me well. And I've realized that I've been treated very well by people who are toxic for me, you know. And I was only being treated well because I was hallucinating that the same things I saw them do to others, they were not doing to me.
Ooh.
But in the background, they were treating me really badly, you know. They were just treating me well to my face. So, yeah. Yeah.
That's the you know when you grow up.
Yeah, I should have listened to you.
I actually agree. I'm relationship-wise, I'm trying to think if I've had such a character. But I know that when you read the Four Agreements, there's a part that says that you mistreat yourself you let people mistreat you to the extent you mistreat yourself. When I am in
any situation. I love that. Ooh.
Yes. Yeah, so when I'm in any situation, if I have ever let someone mistreat me to a certain extent, I'm like, this is how I value myself. It's a me thing at this point. I really need to look at myself. And I think I got this feeling last night. Something happened and I was just like, what's going on? I'm like, damn. And I was like, I don't like the feeling. Like, I mistreat myself, but not to this extent. So you always mistreat yourself to the extent. So you always let people mistreat you to the extent you mistreat yourself. When they bypass that extent is when you're going to go like, you've bypassed to the level I mistreat myself. So
Like this is too far.
It's too far. So maybe the best thing one can do is treat themselves very well so that the extent to how much you let people mistreat you isn't as bad. I think that's like the only thing I can say about that is like, make sure you treat yourself better. I try all the time. And yeah, I agree. I think half of us that we will see is with men. It's like, he would never do that to me. I never say that. Like, I would never say, like, a man would never do that to me. Then they'll do it with their chest. And you'd be like, he did. Yeah, he did. So yeah, I think, yeah, it's a very interesting, we will see. So what is something you'd like to share, apart from the book? What is something you'd like to share that you're working on and you'd like people to know?
Okay, so apart from the book, immediately after the book is done, what I am going to get back to doing is new music. So I want to jump back into music, and I would also like to, I'm not yet sure where this short film is gonna start from, but eventually it's definitely gonna be public. Want to screen it, but I definitely want to show people my writing skills. I'm not sure I'm interested in showing my acting skills, but I guess it happens because it's there. What I'd really like is to also show people the writing skills. We shot it using Fresh Marketing, which is a company where there's four of us. And so we want to push more to show people that we do productions and that our quality of like shooting is good. So I think looking out for the short film would be great. And crossing fingers for new music as well. That will definitely be better than the old stuff they're looking for.
That's so funny. Like, put it there so smartly, girl. I swear that. Thanks. Ludo, I want to give you an opportunity to ask me a question.
Okay. So, basically, you look like someone who does a lot of things, right? I want to know what it is about you that is more unorthodox that I probably wouldn't know that you do.
Dang, I don't know. I'm really trying to think.
So far, I know for a fact that you studied and you actually love accounts, which I find very strange. I don't know if I saw. I don't know if I saw that you do. Is it event management?
I used to.
You used to.
Yeah.
Okay, I find that also quite interesting. At least that would bring out like the passion of the fact that you love. Like, you love seeing people being creative. So, it feels like some form of event management is also bringing out your creative side as well.
Okay. So, you said something you wouldn't know about.
Yeah. So, what is it I wouldn't?
I think something people don't know about me is that I downplay myself.
Okay.
Actively, actually. I now talk about it a lot. I like to play dumb. Like, hey, when everybody is expecting, thinks you're dumb. A lot of things are easy. You know, you don't really need to. Yeah, you don't need to do too much to kind of in their face anyway. I think that's my way of self sabotaging because it means I don't release most of my work or don't talk about most of the projects I get to do. But yeah, like. Now I know people might think I'm smart, but over the years, ever since I was a child, I was always the dumb one. So even when I am leaving this world, I always like to be the dumb one. I'm like, oh, I never knew that happened. Like, I find it so fun. And when somebody discovers I'm smart, they're like, "Dang, really?
No.
It took me a month." I'm like, "I know, right? That's so funny."
So that's something women do that really upsets me. Especially because I've realized that it actually can also be a superpower.
It is a superpower.
Yes.
You realize you can, because no one thinks they're competition at all levels. So be dumb.
Whenever I say like doing that, even to her advantage, I get so upset. I'm like, no.
I do that to my advantage all the time. It's just that it doesn't work anymore.
Like it's not working.
It's not working for everybody anymore. But it does take a while, especially for men. It does take a while for them to realize, really, you could actually do that and you let me do that for you. I'm like, yeah, you offered, duh. So I think that's like one thing every girl should try out. Act dumb for a while and keep doing you. I think you don't get distracted. You don't get overwhelmed. You actually then get to see what people really think about you on most days and how people will treat you. Like, I like to do those little things. I know that perception is very important. So what I also do is, or how people look at you is very important. I like having pink hair or green hair or blue hair or purple hair. And already for that, that's a turn-off for a lot of people. So it helps me sieve. So I play dumb. I do colored hair. Then I have like a really tiny small phone, which is like an iPhone 18, 8. Hey, look at me, think about iPhone 18 already. Ish. Sorry.
I tap into this futuristic spirit.
I can't even afford the S17. But I have an iPhone 8, right? It has a home button and all that. You'd be so surprised what people think of you when you have that. So for me, it's those little things. Like, it's my favorite phone. I have two phones. So it's like my favorite phone. I like to hang out with them. So I think for me, it's maybe the right thing that's very orthodox about me is I'm very crafty. Like, everything I do is very calculated. My playing dumb, my hair, the way you perceive me, the things I'll say, very calculated. And I have fun. And I don't even overthink it. I won't even remember I acted that way. But, yeah, it really just... does this sound toxic? But it really just
sounds like you. It sounds like you really should have taken up being a lawyer. That's what it sounds like.
I wouldn't have pink hair. That's the only thing that pisses me off. Everybody says I would have been a good lawyer, like with pink hair, or I have to look like everybody else.
You know, ironically, I think that's also why I didn't do it, because I was told, like, you do performance arts, you can't do that as well. Yeah, so I was like, because I love law. As much it's as fun. I love taxation, the law that I had to do when studying was brilliant, you know?
Yeah. So maybe that's what's orthodox about me is I plot every single time and I have fun doing it. And this is why I like Taylor Swift's music, because she's always plotting something. So I'm always like, yeah. Me too, if that makes any sense. I'm like, girl, I did that too. But I guess it doesn't work. It stops working after a while. But that doesn't mean on the other end, I am not controlling the narrative on how I want it to be and be there. So, yeah, I think that's like the most orthodox thing about me is I really just enjoy everything my brain puts together. And it does backfire on most times, but that doesn't stop me.
We are looking forward to when you become an author, and I think you'd make a good crime writer about, like, a crime series, you know.
My best friend and I always talk about my life would be a good book, like the things no one knows about, like the things. So something about social media is people, we co-create our life, and we want you to perceive us in a certain way. That doesn't make me that person. So my best friend and I are always talking about how both our lives would be such a good book. Every chapter is like, damn, that happened. Like, I look back to stuff that happened, like even last year, a few years ago, I'm like, wow, that's interesting. I really can't believe I did that or that happened. And and also maybe why I don't do a lot of publicity with my life is, like, I really don't want people to know how intelligent and crafty I am. It's not good for me. It's so funny. Anyway, I'm gonna shut up now. I talk too much.
I feel like you've given away too much now. So whoever was supposed to be like a victim of the craft and has listened to this episode is like,
And to be honest, like, there's no victim of the craft. I don't like to be
a victim. I don't even mean victim in that way, hey? Yeah, I just mean, but maybe you get help and they're like, but you actually could do this.
But I also just want to speak on, like, the victimhood stuff and everything.
Yeah,
I think that we all have a right to kind of live our lives in a certain way, right? It's not my fault that when you look at me, you think I'm dumb or not smart or not good enough. That now that I'm actually playing the role, what you have created in your head, you find that as a problem, right? Like, I don't think you're smart. I don't think you're pretty enough. And those are the things I was told when I was growing up. So I played the part. And is it my fault? Like, for me, it's always those things where I'm letting you believe what you think of me with all your chest. And that's not me maybe doing something very crafty and everything. Let's just be coexisting with your belief. Because I know it doesn't affect me, but I just coexist with your belief and I accept it for who it is. It doesn't define me. It doesn't say much about me, but I'm like, okay, you believe this and this and this of me. I will not try to correct you.
If it's that's more a reflection of you allowing people to be themselves, which is very interesting because you've actually you're shining a light on the fact that how sometimes by us just being ourselves, we kind of get the short end of the stick. Mm-hmm. Because here I am, you know, judging someone and thinking this is the best version of you I will encounter. And so I give you that same version.
Yeah. And it takes no effort. And I think it makes me happier. Because also for me, I experience a lot of anxiety and overthinking and everything. And I'm like, I used to love people pleasing. And I still do to a certain extent. Mm-hmm. I just realize it's so overwhelming to try to prove people wrong.
Yeah.
It's so overwhelming. And if anything, if anybody's going to learn anything from me is, guys, me, I'm just here. Everything else, there's nothing I can do. I don't have control and power over that, so I won't do it. It's about control and power. It's fun. Yeah. Anyway, read the 48 Laws of Power. I haven't read it, but I have snippets of it, and I think it's the best book, one of the best books ever.
I've always thought I should read it. I think I should actually get my hands on it.
You should. I like how Robert thinks and all his other books. I like how he speaks and how he views the world. And yeah.
Wait, 48 Laws of Power is that? That's not Robert Ludlum, is it?
No, what's his name? But it's Robert something. I hope I'm not
okay. Because I was going to say Ludlum doesn't sound like someone to write that sort of a book. Okay.
let me search for it. 48. Laws. Yeah, Robert Greene, actually, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So, that was an interesting question. My last question for you, Lode, is what do you look forward to? I feel like asked this somehow, but yeah, just in general. What do you look forward to?
Not in relation to the book, just in general?
Yeah, just in general.
In general, I think I look forward to a point where doing creative work comes with a lot more ease, like effortless ease, if that makes sense. Like getting to the point, not only with like having the fan base and support, but also to the place mentally, like internally, where as I am releasing something, you know, there's a lot more peace with it. So I think right now I'm still wrestling with the me that wants to still look correct, you know, like have this picture painted in people's minds, and the me that's releasing this and knowing that it will be helpful to a lot of young people out there. So I can't wait for the ease where it's just like, okay, I'm working on this. I've accepted this is what I'm working on. I'm not even worried about the friction that comes because believe it or not, there's friction even when you're trying to be the nicest, sweetest person. And so let me release it. And it's not like feeling like I have to, because again, I guess this also comes with the territory of doing a new thing because now it's a book and I haven't done it before, or doing a short film and it's a new thing. There's always that, you know, you have to market yourself differently. It's more aggressive. Like if I was doing a poetry show, it would be more easier. But yeah, I wait for that comfort, you know, where I'm fully tapping into saying things are flowing to me with ease. Things are flowing to me with ease. You know, that's what I look forward to.
Well, thank you so much for being here. That's a good note to end the podcast on. I loved having you here. You're such an easy person to talk to. And yeah, really made me say talk a lot. So, no, that's a good one. But yeah, I'm really grateful for that. And yeah, thank you for having. Any last things you want to share with us before you go?
Just
where can we find you? Or where can you find your work?
So that's what I just wanted to make mention. Like on all social media platforms, It's Ludo and then Fresh, but with the E at the end. So L-U-D-O and then a space, definitely F-R-E-S-H-E, right? And you can find that on my Facebook, TikTok, Instagram. And I was going to say, if you're searching for online platforms, not yet. So just hit me up or do a follow, and there'll definitely be details on how to order a book there. Oh, yeah.
Great. Well, I am excited about your book. Your book is titled Lotus, and it's a memoir about your life. And yeah, we loved having you. And for everybody listening, follow up Ludo's work and let us know what you think, and tell a friend to tell a friend. With that being said, bye for now.
Bye. Thanks for having me.